Welcome to Dangerous Christianity with Dr. Christopher Rodkey, where we explore new ways of being Christian that go against the grain, stands up against the church when it's evil, speaks truth to power, and reclaims the Bible as a radical message of hope, liberation, and justice. Dr. Rodkey is pastor of St. Paul's United Church of Christ in Dallastown, Pennsylvania, and leads the Sacred Profane Community, a post-faith gathering for those seeking to nurture a literate and misfit, geeky, sometimes sneaky, as well as a queer-affirming and beer-affirming spirituality. All information mentioned throughout the program is listed in the show notes. And now, please welcome Dr. Christopher Rodkey.
Reading from the Gospel of John, the 20th chapter, beginning in verse 11. Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, 'I am ascending to my Father and to your Father, and to my God and your God.'" Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Here ends the reading. On Tuesday, March 26th, at St. Mary Baptist Church, historically African-American church, was burned to the ground in Louisiana. Nothing was salvaged. On April 2nd, Greater Union Baptist Church, also in Louisiana, was burned to the ground in an apparent arson. On April 4th, another African-American church in the same town, Mount Pleasant Baptist Church, was burned down. These were racially motivated hate crimes, and apparently the young man arrested is the son of the local sheriff. Interestingly, the way this got reported in the news was to blame the music that the kid listened to, and everyone acts so surprised that he would act like this when the very first picture released from his social media outlet to the media had a clear hate group symbol on the wall right behind him. That's the first thing I saw when I saw it. You might have seen this in the news. This past Monday, the world watched in horror as the roof of the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris burned, culminating in the steeple crashing through what used to be the roof made of wood and lead and into the sanctuary. Also on Monday, one of the oldest and largest Buddhist communities and centers in the United States, in Michigan, was burned to the ground. On Wednesday, they pulled a large Buddha statue from the ashes, which was one of the few things to survive the fire, and even that was damaged. We've had our share of violence associated with religions, locally, foreign, connected to people we know. We've had our share of violence connected with houses of worship. We know that it's often motivated by hate, but sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's just random. Sometimes it's just how it goes. Part of being human is accepting the hazard of being human, which is that random things happen. Life isn't always fair. In fact, life isn't fair at all. There's no explanation for random things that happen. Being human is a sentence to be born, and it's a sentence to die. But we know that it's in the space between our birth and death where we make things matter. Some of you might have heard the poem "The Dash," right? You sometimes see it referenced in funerals and in memorial services. And I can't repeat any of it because the person who wrote it has a legal team that looks for people that say it without their permission. But you know the truth of that poem, right? What matters is what we do with the life that we have in ways that affect others around us in positive ways. We can't, what we have isn't what makes us what we are. Wealth and status can be earned, but they can easily be taken away. The ability to do something with our lives, with that space between our birth and death, is what matters. Random things can happen to us, like fires or accidents. But just as a church is not really a building, so are our lives on this earth not the same as our bodies. Our bodies fail us, but we're much more than that. And we should live to be much more than what our body and the date of being born and the date of dying are. So imagine this situation. Your son, your friend, your brother, your companion is put on trial, unfairly, sentenced to death. It happens all the time. Someone who was so amazing and compelling and magnetic that light emanated from him on the top of a mountain. Someone that could heal others who were sick. Someone who gave others hope in the face of a hopeless situation. Someone who angered some people with pull in the government who were themselves afraid that if they didn't put him to death, then they would be held responsible for anything that happened and maybe they would be punished. We should always remember that while crucifixions might not have been everyday occurrences in Jerusalem, they were not uncommon. The spectacle of a crucifixion was meant to be so horrific that it would discourage people from doing whatever it was they were doing to land themselves nailed onto that cross. But that didn't make it any less horrific. We should remember that the word excruciating literally means out of crucifying. The very word excruciating was invented to specifically name the pain and the suffering of those being crucified. So standing there and watching your friend bleeding and dying on a cross, you would know that typically the person would die from blood filling their lungs, as if they were drowning. You couldn't help but feel the humiliation and being appalled by it. We know that in other cases, people on the cross would be tortured even further and have them beg for death while they are on the cross. Now, this happened regularly, and it was seen as the worst possible thing that could happen to you. The Roman soldiers that were there were doing a job. They didn't really care who it was for the most part, and they were following orders from the state. This was a state execution. Now, we know from a Roman writer of that time, a philosopher and politician named Cicero, that some Romans believed that this was a blatant abuse of government. He wrote that crucifixion was so horrific that the word cross should never, ever be said out loud. The word or idea of cross should never even be thought of or never even seen. It was so offensive. A Jewish writer named Josephus from this time described watching his crucifixion as something that brought tears to his eyes and even described an instance where a crucifixion was once called off in the middle of it, and two of the three people were brought down from the cross and two of them died anyway after being brought down. Imagine that you're there watching this person that's special to you die. Hanging from the cross, imagine watching it from the position of Mary, your child, or your friend. And this is the story. It's not just a friend, it's not just a son or a leader or a brother. The story is that this is God nailed to the cross. Imagine that. That's the same God who created the world, was rejected by the world, and condemned to the cross. God was spit on and mocked and abused on the same way. On the way to the cross. God, who time and time again was faithful to God's people, quite literally in front of them dying. God pierced with metal and nailed to wood. God, whose name is so sacred that you should never say the name out loud, arriving to a human end that is so profane that you should not ever think of it. And you loved him. And there he is. We heard the rest of the story from the Gospel of John. You see him die. You see him taken down. You saw his body prepared for burial. You saw him entombed. You saw it. And the women arriving on the third day to ritually preserve the body of your friend that had died, which is the only time a woman would touch the dead in that time as a matter of ritual, they find him alive. Can you imagine that? Can you really imagine that? Imagine you're going to the church that had been burned down by white supremacists in the ashes. And you see arising out of those ashes, the church is what it's been all along in worship, the people and their hope. Imagine you woke up in this moment, and in an instance, the Notre Dame Cathedral might still have 900-year-old wood burned beyond recognition and burned to ash. But the reality of the Christian hope is now manifest. That imagine that if the poor are fed and the naked are clothed and those who are down are lifted up. Being able to imagine it does not make it so, but we can imagine it. In fact, we're called to that hope. I can't imagine anyone having the hate in their heart to want to burn it down a church, but it is so. Nor can I really imagine a world that is so indifferent to the burning of black churches, but yet it is the world we live in. I couldn't imagine that within days of Notre Dame burning that Pat Robertson went on TV to blame homosexuals. But I suppose that I should expect cruelty and dishonesty from those voices that speak against God. I wish it weren't so, but it's the world we live in. I wish we didn't live in a world where people I know still believe that the kids killed in Jacksonville and Sandy Hook were stage actors, because nothing so horrific could ever happen in our country. It's all part of a political agenda. I wish we lived in that world where that were true, but it isn't. We live in a world that's not always fair or just or even nice, but that's the story. We live in a world where God is even executed like a petty, common rebel rouser. So rational thinking aside, conspiracy thinking aside, historical scholarship aside, the failings of the church aside, we really only arrive to this moment, Easter, if we really accept the horror from which it springs. The traditional teaching, which Americans don't like to talk about so much, is that Jesus even goes to hell, and it's in hell where we are redeemed. The worst imaginable place, their salvation is offered to the world. That not only does your past not matter anymore, not only does it not matter where you've been or what you've been told about your inadequacies or what people have done to you, every one of us is a love child of God who calls us by name. We're liberated. Even if you're convinced that hell is your future, Jesus opened the gates of hell. And you know what? I can think of nothing more true than this, that it's at our darkest moment where hope shines through. It's in our darkest place where sometimes the grace of God only becomes evident directly to us. If you can believe that we live in a world where God's self is nailed tightly to a cross, we can also believe that God is bigger than all of this. In fact, I choose to believe that God must be bigger than all of this. So if you can imagine the joy of seeing the man you loved, your friend, your child, alive from the dead, and believing even more amazing that it is God, believing with me that God nailed to the cross is exactly what the world wants. And what this world believes that it needs is to nail down God to the cross, to keep it there, making God small and narrow and limited. The world wants us to believe in a God that is not really loving, or a God that is selective, or a God interested in rules written down in a book. You can nail God down, and it comes with a great deal of suffering and horror, but you can't keep God down, because God is bigger than death itself. The conception we had of God must be bigger than what we believe we can kill. God is bigger than whatever you've been told hell is. And hell, God is even bigger than you've ever been told God is. Even as I'm telling it to you today, it's beyond our imagination to comprehend the love that is for us from God. The love that assimilates any problem we have. The love that we so wish we had from elsewhere in the world. And that's the good news. Our imperfection, our failings are what keeps us down. But those are the things that make us what we are. Because of our imperfection and our brokenness, believe with me that God is bigger than all of this. So I hope that gives you joy today on this Easter. So often we focus on what we can't do or what we wish we could do, or even looking backward in hindsight of what we should have done. But because of our imperfection, our inability to even think about the love of God that is presented to us in the Jesus story in a full sense, we can then have hope. Because as you can imagine, on that first Easter, going to the tomb expecting death and the result of human depravity and cruelty in the body of God, they found life. And not just human life, but real life. Not just a body breathing, but a body that has overcome every failed system that had previously tried to cut it down. A body that, as a baby, would not be counted by the emperor in the census, cannot be owned and destroyed by the empire, and the empire was seen as the greatest, most humongous force of military strength in the world. You can kill God. You can burn down the houses of worship dedicated to God. But Easter shows us that God is bigger than anything that we could conceive in killing God. The body of Jesus standing before the women, breathing, scarred by what it had been through, and knocked down the most powerful thing imaginable, just by breathing. It's a threat to everything that this world has to hold us back from stepping into new life. The resurrection of Jesus isn't bringing a king that is simply above the state or the emperor. The resurrection of Jesus demands that even the most powerful force in the world, the empire, when it chooses to nail God on a cross and kills God, that you can keep killing God, but God has already won. And for many of us, it's just a matter of accepting that beyond arguing about history or what really happened, as someone would like to say, or when it comes to Easter, and beyond simply accepting a story, is the very reality that Easter means. And that's why it's so important. I don't believe there's anything more true. We live, someday we'll die. I know that my body is going to melt away somewhere. But in hell, even death is overcome. The greatest joy imaginable, which is inadequate for what it will be because my imagination is limited to the absolute grace and love of God, which God has for us in my mind. The greatest joy imaginable to me is to hear the trumpet sound and be reunited with those who had died before us, and all of what came before that kept us down or even killed us is now in the past tense and now just a memory. For John of Patmos wrote in the second to last chapter of the entire Bible, the second to last book of the book of Revelation, that tears will be wiped away. Pain gone, crying gone, the empire gone, disease gone, cancer gone, racism and church buildings finally overcome. Addiction, the thing that's slowly eating away our community, gone. The trauma which we can't seem to live beyond in this world, gone. The definition society imposes on us in deadly ways, gone. These former things have passed away. The first things are no longer. On Easter, we can say resoundingly, you can burn down a church. You can silence me. You can stamp me down. You can embarrass me in public. You can defame me. You can oppress me. But you can even literally quite literally kill God, but not even death can hold me down. Because Jesus shows us that God is bigger than death. So this is the good news of Easter, that this joy that we can only begin to imagine is beyond whatever we can conceive as joy. And not even the grave can keep us from the magnetic attraction that we all have toward God. So imagine that in this hope that we will again see our parents and again see our grandparents and our aunts and our uncles and our partners and our spouses and our children that were born, our children that never got the chance to be born, the saints we have spent worshiping alongside in our churches. In this church, I think of all the saints that we've buried in the time I've been here. All these people we've known, with God wiping away the tears, the innumerable multitude greeting us all. Just as on the first Easter, when the women went to the grave fully expecting death. Death is interrupted with a question. Jesus asking, why are you weeping?
Thank you for listening to Dangerous Christianity. For more information about how to get involved in the movement, how to contact Dr. Christopher Rodkey, or where to find information regarding his preaching itinerary, publications, or how to make a contribution to his ministry, please refer to the listed show notes. Dr. Rodkey again would like to thank all of his listeners for continuously supporting and tuning into his work and message. Thank you.